Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Geek Digest podcast, a podcast where we talk about all things geek culture, movies, video games, television, geek culture. It's mostly video games, though, guys. We mention movies and television because it's geek culture, but it's mostly video games. My name is Victoria.
My name is Zaphod, and I'm recording today. This is a true
fact.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
And I just want this to be on the record. Well, I mean, last time it could have been on the record, but nobody would have known. So
exactly. If you guys don't follow us on Twitter, you will know that. You will know that there was no episode this week.
Nope.
And the reason for that is because Zay and I had a really good, really good, really good episode last week.
It's probably the best episode
ASMR
we've ever recorded.
Moment. It was pretty sick. And then he sent me the file and it downloaded really fast. Not great. Bit scary for me because usually it takes a little bit to download. I edit the raw file. So it's a really big file. So then I go into the file and it's empty. So then I messaged Zay and I was like, my dude, you sent me the wrong file? What's going on here? What? You want to send me the right file so I can edit it? The right file did not exist.
It just did not. I swear, like, we check because this has happened before where we've gone the whole episode and I didn't record.
Yeah, that did happen once. He did not press the record button.
I just never hit the button to start with.
Fucking God.
But this time, I did hit the button, and I think it was my hard drive just running out of space.
Yeah.
And so,
what you guys don't know is that before I say the hello, everyone, and welcome to the Geek Digest podcast, I ask Zay every week if he sees a waveform.
Mm-hmm. But she doesn't tell you that that's a check to see if she also has a waveform. So it's not just me. It's not my problem. I wash my hands of this.
That's, you know, we'll let you guys believe what you want to believe. Okay? I'm the woman who has never not recorded. And Zay's the one who has not recorded twice. Anyways, today we are going to be discussing a few things. We're going to be talking a little bit about BlizzCon. I don't personally want to talk too much about BlizzCon because I'm still kind of pissed off at Blizzard for the China thing. But we do want to talk a little bit about it.
There was two big announcements.
Yeah, those are kind of what we're going to touch on. We're also going to talk about some drama going on with Kotaku and our good, amazing favorite journalist, Jason Schreier. And then we're also going to be talking about EA and Valve having a relationship that I never thought I would expect.
Mm-hmm.
I never would have expected it. But before we talk about those things, Zay and I have been talking about doing this for a really long time. We've wanted to do interviews on the Geek Digest for a very long time, and we kind of thought it would be good to start with each other, because you guys know who we are. A lot of you guys know who we are, but I'm sure there are some of you who don't really know us, and we're just kind of like voices behind a mic. And we thought it would be interesting to start off these interviews, kind of get our feet wet, get me back into my journalism history life, by interviewing each other. In the future, when we're interviewing other people, we think we're gonna make them separate episodes. We're not sure yet. Maybe we'll rely on what you guys have to say about it. But in today's episode, because it is a bit of a slower news week, we're gonna do a little bit of an interview of me, and then we're gonna talk about all of the stuff that's going on with BlizzCon and Jason Schreier and whatnot. So, Zay, tell the people what you want to know about me.
tell them what I want to know about you.
Tell them what the fuck you're going to ask me.
I want to know why people think you have angel hair. That's number one, Victoria Shaz.
Okay, so last night in stream, which was Friday night, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, we were talking about how my hair just does whatever I tell it to. And I said that my nickname used to be Angel Hair. And this comes from when I worked at Lush. My nickname wasn't Angel Hair. My nickname was Anime Eyes. But
oh, that's great.
I know. That was like, if you call, like, if you go like, yo, Anime Eyes, like, I actually respond to it because that was my nickname.
Oh, that is fantastic.
I know. But when I started working at Lush, like, all of my friends were like, well, it makes sense that you work at Lush because you've got fucking angel hair. And then it just like started picking up. So every time I got my hair cut, they'd be like, of course this haircut and color would look good on you. You have angel hair. So it's just like a thing.
Ugh. That's so funny.
It's the only way to describe it.
Because it seemed like, it just last night on stream, it almost seemed like it was like, nobody. Nobody all.
No.
Not a single soul in the world. Vic, I have angel hair. I was like, what? And what the fuck?
It's not like I said it myself. Someone else said it to me.
It was
back
funny.
In the day. No, it was. I was like, I realize this probably seems a bit extra, but I'm just going based on my life.
It's
okay?
You though, Vic. It's you, and we know it.
I'm about as extra as it gets.
So let's bring it back to a young wee Vic. What was
little baby Vic?
What was a little tiny wee baby Vic like? And when did she decide, like myself, at some point, that she wasn't getting enough attention from those people around her, and decided to seek more validation and attention from everybody across the world on the internet?
So baby Vic was like an absolute fucking loner. Whenever
really?
I tell people this, they never expect it. I was like really severely bullied. Like I honestly, like I have a distinct memory at my first elementary school of like going out to recess and just sitting on the ground and reading because that's all I wanted to do. I was like six, guys.
Yeah.
And like, that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to read my books and be alone. And like, I've been introverted for as long as I can remember. I've always, which again, a lot of people don't believe me when I say I'm introverted, but introversion doesn't mean you're not good at being social or you're not outgoing.
Sure.
It just means that like you need a lot of alone time to recharge. And that's absolutely how I am. So that's what like wee Babby Victoria was like. I started off my love of geek culture, like when I was like a kid, like a really, really young kid, like my dad showed me Star Wars when I was like three. Did I even understand it? No, but like, did I love it? Yes. And, you know, my dad's always been a huge fan of like science fiction and fantasy. And then my mom, you know, like before I could read, she read me the first Harry Potter and then I started reading them myself. And I've just kind of like all for literally as long as I can remember, I've been like entrenched in geek culture. I've loved it my whole entire life.
So you'd say your parents kind of were the catalyst in so many ways that got you interested in,
yeah,
in kind of maybe reading or fantasy, sci-fi,
yes,
just to begin with.
Yes, absolutely. I absolutely like credit my dad for like my love of like science fiction because he just like showed me all of these things when I was so young.
That's awesome.
And then like, and also like of like more like, but mostly science fiction because my mom likes fantasy stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
So I would credit kind of both of my parents for that. But like, you know, like, before I could read, my mom read me, you know, all of the C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia books. Like, mm-hmm. It's just like, and like, even before I could understand, like, most people tell their kids Aesop's Fables. My parents told me, like, Aesop's Fables and Greek myths. And my dad would, like, write stories and, like, tell me them like they were stories. But not actually write them. Like,
yeah.
He would just come up with them and tell them to me as a kid, like you tell a little kid an Aesop's Fable. But it was, like, a story that he would tell me, and like my mom would do the same thing, and like I remember these stories.
So like storytelling and just kind of general world creation has kind of been a part of your life and your identity for as long as you can remember.
Yeah, literally my whole entire memories.
That's fascinating.
Involve like storytelling and creativity. Is it any wonder that that's what I'm like obsessed with now?
No,
in
that
my adult
I was
life,
just
right?
Gonna say,
like,
that makes total sense because
yeah.
that even goes into your love of like multiplayer MMORPGs, right?
Or, yes.
And Skyrim,
yes.
And some of these,
yes,
bigger open world games because
exactly.
Like, and Mass Effect, because those
yes.
are huge, massive worlds with many.
Mm-hmm.
Branching decisions that can kind
yes.
of replicate across like Mass
yeah.
Effect different games.
Exactly.
That's pretty
and
fascinating.
And it did translate to video games. Like I'll be honest, like when I was like 8, I didn't really care about video games because all I cared about were the books I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
Then I discovered Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Then I discovered Harvest Moon. Then we got an Xbox and I discovered Dragon Age. Right? And I discovered Assassin's Creed, and I realized that all of these games, oh my God, there are games with these stories that I love reading, but
mm-hmm.
I can consume them in a different way. And that's when my gaming obsession became real. I think I was like 11.
Nice.
I remember for my brother's birthday once, all he wanted was a multiplayer game that we could play on the GameCube together. And I bought Tales of Symphonia for the GameCube.
Oh, nice. Okay.
and my entire perspective on how video games tell stories changed when I played that game. Because we played like 80 hours of that game. There were so many twists and turns. It's like a traditional JRPG. If you haven't played one of the Tales games, it's like a traditional JRPG with like really, really long, lengthy storytelling. And my whole perspective just changed. And that's I was awesome. Like, I love video games so much. And then from there, it was like finding Dragon Age, finding Mass Effect, finding all of these like, you know, Assassin's Creed, Assassin's Creed 2. And that helped with my love of history. It was like, oh my God, I get this like cool video game storytelling story. But also like, this is a historical character that I read about last week. Like It really just like RPGs helped me. It was just like the perfect marriage of all of the other things I loved.
That's so fascinating. Just because I think video games, at least for older generations, have always been seen as like little teeny side things that only nerds do and are not really centered around anything like pieces of art or history or culture or anything. But like for people like you and me who grew up playing these things and have spent their whole lives kind of dedicating creative endeavors to video games, it's a massive part of people's culture, and it really enforces and encourages a lot of different things. And for you, 100%. Like your love of history and world building and all of these things, with your love of video games, is I know video games traditionally have been seen and not in any correct way possible, but as something that is sort of more male centric or geared towards guys and boys. Have you ever found that to be kind of a pain point for you, like people believing that you're into video games, or that you have experienced kind of any kind of like discrimination, especially like in your content creation for being into gaming?
All the time. It's not just gaming though, like it's all of geek culture, but it is really prevalent in gaming. I find that people don't believe that I play video games because I guess I don't seem like the kind of person who would, which bothers me, because what kind of person seems like the kind of person that would play video games, you know what I mean?
Sure.
That's what people always say to me. They're always like, well, like, they're basically saying like, well, you're blonde and beautiful, so why do you play video games?
Right, because
like I actually had someone say that to me. Someone actually said that to me once, and I was like, "So because I'm blonde and what society traditionally considers to be beautiful, you think I literally just can't enjoy Mass Effect? Like, that doesn't make sense." It's something that never really made sense to me.
Yeah,
because like even my brother, like I have a younger brother. He's a really like sporty dude, like, you know, and if you look at him, he wouldn't seem like the kind of person who would traditionally play video games, but like him and I muck hours of video games.
Mm-hmm.
Like I literally remember one winter, like 3 or 4 years ago, where we just played like 12 hours of WoW, like 4 days in a row. That's all we did. I was in my 20s. Like, it's frustrating. It happens a lot in gaming culture. It happens a lot in like geek culture too, though.
For
right.
Sure.
Like I was at a convention once, and which I go to conventions all the time, I love them.
Mm-hmm.
I was waiting in line. I have these black milk Star Wars leggings that have Han Solo and Carbonite on them.
Nice.
And I was waiting to get into the con to get my badge, and I'm at the front of the line, and there's one of the workers, and he looks me up and down, and he says, "Were you even fucking alive when Star Wars came out?" And I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?
Like, why does that fucking matter, asshole?"
I know. So
am I not allowed to like things from my generation?
Yes. Right. The first thing that ran through my head was, does he not know what DVDs are?
Yeah.
And then the second thing that ran through my head was what I said to him. And I looked at him and I said, "I'm actually 370. I'm glad I look so good." And you could tell he felt like really stupid and uncomfortable. But it's just like passive aggressive comments like those that I get a lot. That are frustrating, but thankfully I've surrounded myself with, you know, a lot of people that know who I am and also like the things that I like, so they don't kind of question. But it's always like whenever I meet someone new, if I happen to tell them that I fucking play video games, they're like, "Oh my God, really?" And like I've had multiple dudes like treat me like a fucking unicorn.
Yeah.
because I play video games. Like, my first boyfriend literally called me a geek goddess once. And I was like, stop.
Is that like in a negative way or?
No, it was like a worship thing. Because I played video games, it was like a worshiping thing.
Got it. Okay.
And I was like, I'm just a person that really likes Stardew Valley. Like, yeah. can we just let it be? Like,
yeah.
I don't call you a geek god because you play 10 hours of COD a day. Right, like,
right.
Please, just treat me like a normal person. I think that's what most women in geek culture want. Just, sure. Like, stop treating me like a fucking unicorn for liking the things you like. It doesn't make you special. Like, from what I understand from the statistics, 51% of gamers are actually women. So, at least the statistics that I read a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, we're half of the world. We're half of the gamers, guys.
Yeah, you're more than half of the world. I mean, at least on a global scale, women are more populous than men. So it would make sense to me that that fact is true. If you heard a pause in my voice, I was like, I don't believe that. But that's also my preconceived notion of what traditional or historical
mobile gaming
culture
too.
Has been for gaming.
That's the thing, right? Because that is, like, especially because of our age, right? Like, we had to grow up through this time where, like, it was weird for a girl to play video games. It was weird for a girl to go into a comic book store, which I still feel very often.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just like, it is a very real thing that I do have to, like, just deal with. And I hate that I have to deal with it all the time. It's exhausting.
That makes sense. To have to be in a position to feel like you're defending yourself for just enjoying the things that you enjoy.
There's constant quizzing.
Yeah.
I'm talking like, well, do you know what happened in episode 2 of this thing and this thing of Star Wars? And I'm like, you know what? I don't have to answer you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I know a lot. Like, I use Star Wars as an example a lot because, like, you know, I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
Mm-hmm.
So that I got Leia Organa's face tattooed on me.
Yeah, you're like probably a bigger Star Wars fan than I am. I'm like fairly big, but I'd say you definitely eclipse there.
I am a massive, massive Star Wars fan. And when people find that out, I have had dudes be like, well, what happened in this episode of the Clone Wars? But, like, the backstory behind that of, like, and I'm like, okay, chill. Just calm down.
It's true, though. I mean, I think, not to justify or anything like that, but I think nerds and geeks and people that have been into sci-fi, fantasy, video games, anything in this realm, have kind of had to be defensive of those things for a very long time.
Right.
And they were always, for a very, very long time, seen as outcasts. Not that any of this defends anybody's behavior, but older people or people that have not really had an experience in their lifetime where being a geek and being into nerdy things is kind of part of mainstream culture aren't really used to not having to defend that. Like, where you can show up to school with your magic cards and everyone doesn't beat the shit out of you, you know?
Oh my God, I got my ass roasted in grade 3 for showing up with my magic cards.
Right, yeah. Like, I remember doing that too, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, but also at the same time, when Pokemon came out, my elementary school courtyard turned into a legit, like, stock market NYSE trading forum.
Absolutely.
Like, people were throwing around, like, I got a Bulbasaur! Who needs a Bulbasaur? And then some kid would yell, like, 2 minutes away and run over and start, and you get offers on the table, you know?
100%.
So
it was the same
way
at my school.
Yeah. Yeah. We grew up with this being adopted way more widely. And so for that, I think people can be protective, and it definitely becomes unfair when it comes to women in nerd and geek culture.
Yeah. It's frustrating because, like, when people see me at face value, like, they don't realize that I also had to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was heavily bullied until high school.
Sure.
So, like, you know, if we're talking about that realm of thinking, like a lot of the people who kind of question me on this stuff seem to think of me as, like, the quote unquote enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I struggled the same way you guys struggled, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and I just want to, like, shake them and be like, you say you're bullied. I was fucking bullied too. Like, like, you're not alone in that. So,
and it's a good thing that it becomes widely accepted, because then you can crawl out of the basement and live your life the way you want to.
Well, no, but seriously, fucking really.
Do you
think?
Yeah, go ahead.
What? No, you go.
I was just going to say, do you think that part of that has inspired you wanting to create content as a woman who is interested in books and fantasy and writing and gaming, yeah, and do the things that you want to? Is that part of what has inspired your content creation life, and like what else might have inspired that?
Yeah, I really came into my own in university. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, I was bullied in middle school. In high school, I was just like so focused on getting to university, and like I kind of came into my own in grade 12, but then I went to university and like I really came into who I was as a person in university. Honestly, I started creating content for a purely practical reason, and then it evolved, which is a lot different than a lot of other people. So I feel like it's kind of an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in my final year of university, September 2014. I'm sitting there panicking. Holy shit, I'm getting an English degree, English and history. What the fuck am I going to do with my life? Oh my fucking God. How like am I going to get a fucking job?
Who yeah. got liberal so arts I was degrees. Like, yeah.
Shit. Okay, I need to go to journalism school. And I am such a competitive person that I want to be the best.
You?
I want to be the
what?
Absolute
you
best.
Slytherin?
I know. This not is very Slytherin of me, right?
This is so surprising to me. I've never
shocking.
Thought of this whatsoever.
I know. Stunning, right? So I was like, I need to be good at being on camera. I need to be good at being on camera because I'm going to be doing on-camera stuff at J school. I read a lot of books. I'm studying English. I'm going to start a book channel. So I sat down and I started a book channel, and
nice.
I just started making videos because I wanted to be used to being in front of a camera. Then I started loving it. Then I gained 100 subscribers. You know, I was still like grinding away at it, posting a video like every week. And then in January of 2015, I posted a book haul and it blew up. And then within like 3 days, I had 1,000 subscribers.
So what's a book haul?
A book haul.
Oh, book
so basically,
haul. Okay.
Yeah, I bought a whole bunch of books, and you just talk about them, when you're going to read them, what's exciting about them, why do you find them interesting? It's like a really easy way to get a lot of views on BookTube.
Mm-hmm.
So I posted this, and I got 1,000 subscribers within 3 days.
Nice.
So I was like, okay, holy shit. And then it's just kind of grown from there. You know, I really started loving content creation. And then I had kind of already found the body positivity movement then, but I really found the body positivity movement. Then I started kind of cultivating my Instagram. And this whole time, in the back of my head, I was like, I want to stream on Twitch. Like this whole like I've had my Twitch channel for like since Twitch started.
Mm-hmm.
But I never like, I was so scared. I was so scared of streaming on Twitch because I was so scared of the gaming community. And I was so scared that, you know, what we were talking about in the last question was going to happen to me.
Sure.
And then, you know, I was still creating content. Then I was in a job that I hated, and I was like, I need some joy in my life. Like I was in a job I hated, a relationship I wasn't happy in. And I was just like, fuck it. I'm streaming on Twitch. Fuck it. So I started streaming, and then I just haven't stopped. And, you know, like, this was like, you know, like creating content has helped me create my career. Because
sure.
I work in marketing now. I never studied marketing, but I fell in love with digital marketing through content creation when I started doing that 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, content creation has changed the entire trajectory of my life.
That's awesome.
Because I didn't really know, and I went to journalism school, but at the same time, I was like loving creating content on YouTube,
mm-hmm,
and loving creating content on Instagram and stuff, and now streaming. And then that helped me like decide, hey, like I really, really like I want to do marketing as my job. So it literally has like changed the trajectory of my life.
What were your first streams like compared to what you have now? Like what, like, cause I always like to look back and see like how terrible my setup was and how my audio was just shit.
My God.
And just like how much you learn in the process of doing it. So like what was the first Victoria Shet? Cause I think I followed you.
Yeah.
I think you had been streaming for four. Well, I think from what you told me, you streamed for a little while and then you took a break. And when you came back, started to hit it a little harder. But yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Tell us what that was like.
So I had a leg up on everyone because I already had all of the gear.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the webcam. I had a really good mic already from journalism school. I just like, I look back at them. Like I actually have one of them saved on YouTube.
Nice.
And it's me on playing Stardew.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't have good lighting. My background is so disorganized. Like my bookshelves make me cringe. But like I'm lower energy. That's really the big difference. And I didn't really know how to like filter, like I didn't know how to like set up my lights properly or set up my camera properly. Like it was a lower, I didn't even know that like the Logitech C920 could go in 1080p. Like
oh,
all
I
of
know,
this
right?
stuff, I had no idea.
I don't understand why they don't do that by default. Just a little
right?
side note.
It's so stupid. It's such a lower quality by default. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. So yeah, it's just a lot lower quality and I'm a lot lower energy and I don't have any overlays. I don't have any like notifications for follows. I don't have any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like two or three streams in October of 2017 and then I stopped and then I came back at the beginning of December and within 10 days I got affiliate.
Nice.
And then it's just gone from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
what's
that's the difference.
What's been your biggest like learning, like out of everything that you've learned from streaming on Twitch or from creating content on YouTube and Instagram and your blog, like what would you say is the biggest learning point that you have kind of nailed down as to, you know, how informs your process, informs your ways you want to improve?
I don't know, like the first thing that pops into my head is like you have to be your own hype person.
Mm-hmm.
Like people, but also like, I wax poetic about this a lot. Don't go into content creation like because you think something's going to be successful, right?
Yeah.
I never make a video or stream a game simply because I think more people will watch me. And that's what I think is most important, because when you create a video that you're just making because you think you're going to get a lot of views, but you're not passionate about it, people can tell.
Mm-hmm.
People can see right through you. It doesn't matter how good of an actor you are. People can see right through you.
It's so true.
So creating consistent, organic content that you're truly passionate about is the way that you have growth in the long run.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
very true.
That's, yeah.
It seems like that's been a thoroughfare. I mean, like you just mentioned, your first few streams were Stardew Valley. I think that's how I found you. I was just cruising Stardew Valley and picked a thumbnail that looked interesting.
Yes.
And here we are recording a podcast now. So
fucking wild, right?
Yeah.
Crazy ass shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like that's it. Just create like organic content that you love, and the people that will continue to support you will be there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you don't want like people that just follow you because you posted a popular video. You want people that are going to follow you because they like you for you. And by creating content that you enjoy and that you know that you love and it's things you truly love, you're going to attract people with similar mindsets. And those are the people you want following you. Those are the people you want supporting you, because those are the people that are going to talk to you about their friends. Right? I don't
Absolutely. know. Absolutely.
It's yeah.
One
That's
thing,
how I like live my marketing life. It's like organic growth. Don't buy followers. Don't do that kind of shit. Like,
yeah, view
organic
botting.
Growth is going to be slow. Organic growth is always slow.
Yep.
But it's better.
It is.
By far.
Until it hits a tipping point, and then you start to see, like, what I like to look at as far as my metrics is kind of what they call like the doubling time, right?
Yeah.
So my CCVs are double what they were last year at the same time, right? And so next time I look at those, I hope that it shortens the amount of time that it takes to double, right? And so then you start to see the sort of a real exponential type growth. And
exactly.
And
that happens as you grow, but it's slow at first.
Absolutely.
And that's just how it is.
One thing I've noticed that you've always been really good at, and something I try to take into my own content creation, is really getting to know the people who come in and follow you and decide to make that decision, and having them really feel that sense of community. I'm curious if that's something that you picked up, or have you seen someone else do, or what was your kind of inspiration for that?
I didn't have any inspiration for it. I literally just did it because I know what I would want, right? The way, like, I created content on YouTube for 3 years before I started Twitch. And I always had a problem with YouTube because I felt like, you know, you connect with your subscribers, but only to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started streaming, I had a built-in audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a huge audience because it was trying to translate books to video games, and there isn't a huge crossover there. But, you know, there were quite a few people who came to my streams and were like, oh my God, I watched your writing video, and then I found your Twitch channel. And I was just like, oh my God, like I have this amazing opportunity to actually get to know these people who have like commented on my videos for forever.
Yeah.
And just that's how it started. I just wanted to know these people that watched my videos. I want to know what books they're reading. I want to be able to have that conversation with them. And then I realized, okay, yeah, I mean, like, that's really what people want when they're chatting.
Mm-hmm.
They want to build a community, and I want to build a community that they feel welcome in, and that's just how it began.
For sure.
Right?
I mean, like, I stuck around because I wanted to watch Stardew. I just kind of wanted to passively lurk in someone's channel and watch Stardew as I was working. And between you and Laura and Linus and everybody and Feather and everybody was that was there at that time, A-Dog, I was just like drawn into this community. And I was like, I now have like friends that I talk to and I talk, but I've never met any of them before.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's that's changed now. But since I've, you know, met a few people at TwitchCon and whatnot.
Exactly.
But it's such a crazy little world that we live in, because I think I honestly, I talk to you guys and the people that I've met through Twitch and online 100 times more frequently than I do my friends from high school and from growing up.
Oh my God, yeah,
and
absolutely.
My family even, you know?
Mm-hmm, I get that.
Yeah, it's just, it's a crazy kind of thing that Twitch and content creation has allowed and created.
Yes.
And I think I definitely have taken a lot of inspiration from you as far as creating that community and having that be a big part of, you know, what's at the core of what we do.
Yeah. Well, if you guys are interested in marketing, I have like three core C's of marketing, and like it's consistency, creativity, and community. And like community is the base of it. If it's a pyramid, community is the bottom. Community is the foundation, right? And that's how I like do all of my marketing strategy, whether it's for myself or whether it's for, you know, someone I'm working for. Building a community that people feel connected to is so important. So if you guys are starting off with content creation, do your best to build a community. Get to know the people that are following you. Tweet at them, you know, like message them. Make sure you're a really, really, like, if you're streaming, you've got to be talking to your audience, or else they're not going to want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Right? So,
yeah. It's nothing like going into a small viewer stream, which I like to do sometimes, and waiting 3 to 5 minutes, and they, like, when you've said something in chat, and then they don't even reply or look at it or see what's happening at all. And just having, like, I don't know. What other advice do you have for someone who's just starting out streaming, or is just not even necessarily streaming, but just creating content in general?
You have to be consistent, which is something I've struggled with in the past. But everybody struggles. You've got to be consistent and you've got to be passionate, right? And don't have any expectations of success. You can't be going into something like this and having an expectation that you're going to be a superstar, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to do it because you love it, and that's it. Do it because you love it, and then the people will come.
It's true.
That's it.
The vast majority of us don't make it to superstardom. So.
Exactly. And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's okay. I do it because it's fun and because I enjoy it.
And you have a true and honest community because of that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's important.
Yeah, for sure.
And, like, play the games you like.
So, like, if someone comes in and asks you, like, what game do I play to gain viewership? You know, which is question you've seen before, right? I know I've seen it before. Like, what do you say to a person like that?
I mean, like, honestly, my answer is usually, like, you need to play a game that you love. But if we're talking purely from a strategic standpoint, don't play something like Fortnite. You're going to get lost in the shuffle. Like, you've gotta play something that has a lower viewership. But again, if you're playing a game that you don't like, people are gonna see right through you, right? Play a game that you're either playing for the first time or a game that you love. right? Because those are the kinds of things that people are attracted to. Either someone with a knowledge of the game or somebody who's playing it for the very first time so they can witness those reactions.
Absolutely.
And yeah, that's kind of my best advice.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think there's anything you would have done differently if you started all over from the beginning? Or like if there was a chance where Victoria now could talk to Victoria, who just graduated college and just set up and is recording a video in her apartment for the first time, what advice would you say to young Victoria?
Be more animated. At first, when I first started making my YouTube videos, I was like super like shy in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Just like be more animated from the get-go. Be more open from the get-go. And start Twitch earlier, you stupid bitch. That's it. That's it. Because I thought about starting Twitch for years and years and years, and I just didn't. And, like, I wish I did. So.
Yeah, I feel you there. I just, like, part of me feels like, man, I wish I had started a year before that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, 1 year before that, I wish I had. I think I started watching Twitch with, there was, like, two things that drew me in. Number one was Twitch plays Pokemon.
Yes. Oh, that drew a lot of people to Twitch.
Yeah. I had never seen it before. That was a
huge phenomenon.
I was just like, this is incredible. I was obsessed with it when it was happening. I was there watching everything, all the memes that came from the names.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Fucking Lord Helix.
Yes. Lord Helix. The false god.
Our fucking prophet. It was so good. God, Lord Helix lit up my life. I loved it.
It's a global emote now. Last year at TwitchCon, they had a sculpture of Lord Helix.
I fucking love it.
It was so good. So good. Like,
it's so good.
That's like the things that Twitch does is it takes these like this little microcosm of culture.
Stupid things and makes it. And has
everybody who's part of it identify with it.
Yes, exactly.
And that's like,
oh fuck.
That's some of the
Someone bought me a Lord Helix necklace. God, once.
That's amazing.
So I have like an Omeyante necklace. It's so good because I was so obsessed with like the Twitch Plays Pokemon thing.
Yeah,
it was so good.
That's kind of like, I don't know. I've seen that happen in my channel, and I've definitely seen it in other channels where like a meme of your own channel becomes like an inside joke that people feel a part of and then feel a part of your culture and can say like, I was there when it was created.
Yes.
And,
and
giving people the opportunity to do that, first of all, by showing yourself who you are as a human being and not being afraid of that because people will like it. Some people won't. And that's okay. Like that's okay because you don't want that person anyway.
Exactly.
Right?
Agreed.
It's just a fascinating thing from Twitch. Like, what's,
oh my god, it's so fascinating.
What's like some of the biggest memes or like Victoria things that have come out that you wouldn't have imagined yourself since creating on Twitch and creating content?
I have a thick emote. And I feel like the THICC, VICC, Thick Vic, has like become a thing. I also said please don't feel free to talk to me once.
Oh yeah.
That's never died.
I remember that. A-Dog just roasted you for that. Yeah,
I get my life ended about that.
What was the context for that if they didn't hear that?
I was having such like it was such a sincere moment. I was playing Stardew and someone was like talking about their mental health and I meant to say please don't hesitate to talk to me. I meant to say please don't hesitate to talk to me. But then also at the same time, my brain was like, you should say, please feel free to talk to me. So my brain blended them. And I was like, you know, like if you're ever kind of going through something like this or you're having struggles, please don't feel free to talk to me. It was bad. It was so bad. It was so bad.
Oh, God. I think
never lived that down.
We let that just go on forever because it was like, oh Vic is like, I'm so sad that you're hearing troubles. Don't fucking bother me with that shit because I'm too busy.
Which is like so not true. Yeah. It was so bad. It was rough. I was like, oh, my God, what have I said? I just say stupid shit like that all the time.
Yep. And the and the Vic edges.
Yes. Oh my god, the Vic edges thing is so real. I am so like, I don't know if I just have a depth perception problem. Like, I genuinely don't know what's wrong with me. But I like walk off of edges and drive off of edges in video games constantly. Like, I can't stop. I don't know how to stop. I try not to do it, and I drive off of edges.
Not
like,
even for the memes anymore. It's just
truth. It's not even for the memes. Like, I just, it was never for the memes. Like, mm-hmm. that was my first, like, big successful clip, was me playing Mass Effect. If you guys have ever played Mass Effect, there's a quest on a planet called Pharos, and you have to drive down a pathway in this car called the Mako, and it's the worst. And I literally was like talking to someone and drove right off the edge. I drove right the fuck off. Ugh. And then I did it in another quest about 3 hours later.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's how it began.
In Skyrim, you just mm-hmm. like yeeting Ugh. Yourself off a bridge with, yeah. with your horse.
Oh, and it's not even like it's not even deliberate most of the time. Like, I'm just so bad. I'm just so bad at navigating. Ugh.
That's so awesome.
Is it because I play in third person? I don't know. It probably wouldn't be better in first. So, yeah, I just suck. So, like, those are kind of, like, the things. Like, the please don't feel free to talk to me, the edges, and, like, the thick Vic things. Those are the things that stick out most to me.
Oh, that's great. I love that, yeah. you know, it's great when people know you almost better than yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they expect, you know, part of your character. You know, because, like, I don't mean to say that being on Twitch is playing a character, but it kind of, it exponents.
Yeah, for me, it's like an extreme version of how
of
I am. Exactly, exactly. Yeah. I'm already like really extra in my real life. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a lot, but I ramp it up for the camera because sure. the camera eats up by nature. Like, if you ever work in like TV or whatever, like the first thing you learn is that the camera eats up your energy.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So you have to be like high energy. Like, you have to seem extremely high energy to yourself in order to come off as high energy on the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a balancing game, and I'm already by nature high energy, and sure. I want that high energy to come across in stream because I'm a very positive, like upbeat person that just wants to uplift other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that to come across in my stream, so much so that people ask me if I'm on Adderall.
For sure.
I'm not, guys.
That one has
I'm
stuck with
sober.
You.
Yeah. I know, because, like, I'm not on Adderall.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, I'm, the most I'm on is a puffer, beach.
Yeah, for sure, which definitely That's doesn't it. Alter your mental state whatsoever.
No, that would be quite bad if it did, because I need it to live. So.
It's like, I don't know, whenever I see someone say something like that, I'm like, you bitch, you've never done drugs.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah, like, bring it down a notch, honey boo. Yeah. Honey boo boo, bring it down a notch.
Because
it's
if you have, thing. You would very well know you don't do it on Twitch.
Yeah, exactly. Would not be good. Bad
nah.
news all around.
No.
Would not be good.
No. Not to mention violating numerous terms of service.
Yeah, which like Twitch is already handing out bans like it's their day job. So like, don't test them.
Right.
You know, don't play that game.
What's your biggest like community building effort that you try to do? Like, what's the thing that you do to try to encourage people to feel part of the community or to participate in the community or just to feel like they own part of that community?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know. Like, I just think, like, what I've tried to do, and we kind of mentioned this already, is I've tried to cultivate a sense of welcomeness.
Mm-hmm.
And then I give people praise when they cultivate that sense of welcomeness.
Positive right? reinforcement much?
I want people to feel proud of being part of the community. And I want people to feel proud of being kind to other people that want to join the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is most important. And I feel like that's what I think I'm good at. Like, you know, when we get someone new following, we have like, you know, people always being like, happy follow, like, welcome. Like I've got multiple people saying hi to the first chat that someone says, like, mm-hmm. and that's the kind of stuff that I love. And I feel like that's what I've done well. While also, like, showing their names on my screen with Streamlabs notifications and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, I want to show the people who have supported me. And I feel like those are good community building exercises. And then also Discord. It's
yeah.
so important to have a Discord.
For sure.
Yeah.
I know someone was saying to me that they think that not Mixer, but Discord is going to be the biggest threat to Twitch just because they're starting to introduce that live streaming and
yeah.
they own the Twitch audience for 90%
yeah.
of the time that they're
yeah.
not on Twitch. Right?
That's fair. That's
yeah.
fair.
That
I think
was...
it'll be tougher, but...
Of course.
That's interesting.
Fascinating. Yeah, I found that. I found that pretty fascinating and
that
pretty
is very
insightful.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't really think of that.
Yeah. I
mean, they're going to like come out of left wing and like fuck Mixer's day up.
Yeah. Like they may not even offer the same service, you know, like they have streaming, but that might not be the focus of their core.
No, exactly.
Because it's about the community and they have that there as well, you know.
Well, they understand the community is like it.
Yeah.
That's
sure.
it, sis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, fascinating. That's like all the questions I can think of off the top of my head. Is there anything you want to add or any questions you have?
You asked some fabulous questions, Zay.
Why, thank you.
I want you guys who are listening to let us know what you think of this. I want you to let us know if there are any questions that you didn't get answered. Like, is there anything you wish that Zay had asked me? That's the question. And then I'll answer them on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, then I can still answer those questions, but then also we can learn from what you guys want to know for the next time we do this. So next week I'm going to interview Zay. And then we're going to work on interviewing other people.
We've got a few, I've talked to a couple people
lined up. Yeah.
Who are interested.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll see when it works out with scheduling and the technical aspects of getting that set and working. But like one I'm really interested in that I've been working on for a little while is an organization I told you about, Vic, called the Matrix Guard.
Which is so cool.
Yeah. And they are a pretty cool organization that's putting together people who are going to be unstoppable heroes for suicide awareness, mental health, bullying, just general anxiety of anybody specifically.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it's just a great organization and needs more traction. So I'd be really happy to have that as part of what
as
we
would
do.
I. Yeah. Like, as someone who struggles and has struggled and will probably always, you know, be grappling with, like, anxiety, it's something that I absolutely want to help contribute to.
Definitely.
Anyways, let's talk about Blizzard.
Blizzard.
Blizzard. Tell us what's going on at Blizzard.
So, Blizzard.
BlizzCon.
It was actually, I mean, as far as BlizzCon goes, they didn't ask anybody if they have phones. Not as of yet. So, I mean, I haven't checked in on the live streams today.
Neither have I, but like, would we be surprised?
No, I would not. Two of the biggest announcements that happened out of it are Overwatch 2 and Diablo 4.
Oh, geez, there's a fly in front of my eyes. Oh, sorry.
I thought you were clapping.
No, fuck no. Jesus, no, there was a fly directly going into my nostril. So, yeah, bad timing.
But perfect timing also.
Here's the thing. I don't give a fuck about Overwatch 2, right?
Yeah.
Y'all know I'm forever pissed about Overwatch. Here's the only thing I care about in Overwatch 2. The map is set in Toronto. That's it. That's all I care about.
One of them, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, one of them. But the one they showed, you could see the CN Tower, which is like, sick baby, love that. But also, fuck you for not having a third-person option.
Yeah.
And that's the tea.
I think it's kind of interesting because from reading about it a little bit, like, you can still play Overwatch 2 maps in Overwatch 1. Like,
what?
I'm a little confused on how it all works out, but
that's a bit more than a little confusing.
Yeah.
That's really confusing.
Like, the main things that you get from Overwatch 2 are updated graphics, new skins for characters. They have more PvE modes. They have more story modes. They have more, like, character-specific modes. But you can still play the new maps, and you can play simultaneously. Like, they're not splitting the audience. People that play Overwatch 2 will play with Overwatch 1 players.
So then what's the motivation to buy Overwatch 2?
That's why I'm a bit confused. It just...
Yeah.
It seems to be... Like, they'll still have PvP. They're promising a new core mode called Push Mode.
Like, what's the motivation then?
It kind of, like, goes back to, like, why does this need to be a sequel, right?
Yeah.
Like
why not just add more to the first game? If you're
exactly.
not changing the engine so that people in the first game can still play it, right? And you're not doing, like, all of the other stuff that, like, you would imply for a new game, then why are you even releasing it as a new game? Are you simply doing it because you feel like you have to at this juncture?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense.
It's kind of fascinating. I'm not really sure. I don't even know how to answer that question. Probably should have looked more into it before I started talking about it. But
dead.
they also have no release date, so I think there's still a lot of things that they're kind of ironing out.
Yeah, up in the air about.
And I don't know. They showed a quote unquote gameplay trailer. I was like, oh cool, let's watch the gameplay trailer. Literally, there was 15 seconds of actual gameplay in this gameplay trailer.
Stupid.
The rest was like third person cinematics. I was like, that's not Overwatch. That's not how this works at all.
Yeah, so. Exactly. That's not. But like, that's what Blizzard did. They did another cinematic trailer for Diablo 4.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody really cares about cinematic trailers anymore.
They work at a con to get hype. That's about it.
Right.
Like, but when you're at the con, everybody else is like, show me the fucking gameplay.
That's the thing. I don't care about a cinematic trailer.
Right.
That doesn't matter to me.
They did have a gameplay reveal for Diablo.
Yes. But like,
I haven't
watched
that's
not
yet.
What
I'm
I wanted
right
to see.
Now.
I wanted to see I don't want to see the cinematic trailer. I would only want to see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I I totally agree. And look, here I am watching it just as we're talking about it, and it starts with a cinematic. Like,
yeah. Yeah, like, it's like, I don't care. I don't care. I just want to see the actual game. That's what I care about.
Yeah, this is interesting for Blizzard Diablo, who's had some real good success with Classic WoW and is moving into some of these,
and then
like, people
shit the bed with the China stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about next. Is just there was a whole big mess of things that them and a few other companies got caught up in.
Yeah, and I'm still really angry about it. Like, to the extent that I'm not playing Blizzard games right now.
Yeah,
right?
I kind of am anti playing Blizzard right now too. Like, the other day I was considering just playing some Overwatch because it had been a while, and I was like, you know, I don't really want to do that. I don't really have any interest in that.
Yeah, like, am I sitting here saying I'm boycotting Blizzard for the rest of my life?
No,
but I still have a bad taste in my mouth about the whole China thing, and I feel like they haven't done their due diligence in acknowledging it at BlizzCon.
Agreed.
And I would have felt better if they at least acknowledged their faux pas at BlizzCon.
Yep.
But they haven't.
I mean, at BlizzCon, this I found really interesting and appropriate. There was a bunch of people outside the Anaheim Convention Center. Made me miss my hometown a whole lot, but they were wearing the Pooh Bear costumes, which, if you're unaware of how that relates, it's a big meme for President Jinping, the president or whatever, the PM of China.
Yeah.
They relate him to the Disney character Pooh Bear and say he looks like Pooh Bear. And so that image has been banned across all of China. So, of course, people find the right way to include that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's to be expected. Like, I don't know what Blizzard expected.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Like, I don't know what they expected.
This gameplay does look pretty sweet for Diablo.
What, Diablo
though.
4? Fuck yeah. I love Diablo. I'm so
God.
Stoked. Like, Diablo's going to be sick as hell.
Yeah, this is right up your alley. Like, it's completely third-person, top-down, platforming, dungeoner, not platformer.
Sign me up, baby.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for Diablo 3 to go on sale on Switch so I can play it on Switch.
There you go. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, because I had it on PC. Like, 3 PCs ago. And I stopped playing.
Nice.
But, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I'm excited for Diablo 4. I don't give a fuck about Overwatch 2. I'm still pissed at Blizzard right now.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen anything else come out of it. I'm just going to check Twitter while we're at it.
Yeah, me neither.
Just to see. But I feel like that's the big main happenings.
Yeah. I mean, like, let's talk about what happened with Kotaku this week.
That's what I want to see.
This is really interesting. So, basically, from what I understand of, like, the backstory of the situation, Kotaku was purchased by a private equity owner management team. And, like, it seems like they kind of had a new team come in, and then there were a whole bunch of these new ads that were on the Kotaku website. And basically what happened was they have videos that, like, autoplay with sound, and, like, people were super pissed. So they posted an article on Kotaku basically saying, like, a note to our audience, like, we're so sorry that this is happening. If you have a problem, this article will show you how to contact our new private equity owner management team. And Jason Schreier tweeted this out on October 28th. And then that same day, that article got removed. Kotaku did not remove it.
Nope.
So whoever owns them did remove it. And then the next day, I don't know what article, I think they, I don't know what place they were from. Deadspin. It was Deadspin. Barry Pechesky, he was a writer for Deadspin. He got fired for, quote, not sticking to sports. If you guys don't know, the sticking to sports line is basically a euphemism in the journalism industry for shut the fuck up and stay in your lane.
Yeah.
It's not actually stick to sports, quite literally. It's keep your nose out of business that isn't yours and stick to your writing. So that's kind of what Barry was told. And then he got fired for it. So the CEO of Geo Media fired the deputy editor, who he wasn't just a writer. He was the deputy editor. And basically the GMG union is like saying this is wrong. A whole bunch of people quit Deadspin in solidarity. And yeah, like nothing has really happened since then.
Mm-hmm.
But like there's just a lot of like people getting fired. There's people like everybody who works for Kotaku basically has their profile as the GMG union right now, like standing in solidarity with, you know, Deadspin. And it just seems like a lot of violations of free speech.
Yeah, for sure.
Seems like. And it seems wrong. Like, oh my God, it's literally like we were talking about a couple weeks ago. It's cyberpunk again.
Mm-hmm.
We have the companies that are providing Kotaku with money basically deciding that they didn't want that article on there anymore and just being able to get it removed because they didn't like it. And how wrong is that?
Yeah, for sure.
So,
I don't know. It's kind of cool to see, you know, because free speech exists, that these journalists, yeah, although are very obviously being censored, that this article was removed and
yeah,
that upper management is telling you, quote unquote, to stick to sports,
yeah,
that this is that they're sticking together and still, yes, you know, propagating the things that they want to, you yeah know, they're not, you know, they're quitting Deadspin or they're going around, they're changing their profile pictures. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if
they rallied in Union Square in New York yesterday as well.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, something from this, say, God forbid, Kotaku disappears, that we get yeah a new organization that is centered around these people that have been extricated from the situation and can yeah be the new source of journalistic integrity that we expect yes from someone like Jason Schreier and,
exactly,
and company.
Yeah. I'm proud of the workers for Deadspin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud that they said, fuck you. We're not just going to lay down while you fire someone for not euphemism, using the euphemism sticking to sports, right?
Yeah.
Like, fuck them for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
For firing someone because, you know, they were saying things that you didn't want to hear.
Right.
Like, I don't know, like it seems like something happened with Splinter, the website Splinter as well. I don't know for sure on that, but a whole bunch of people resigned from Deadspin, and I know that.
Interesting.
So, yeah, like basically like the thing happened where the Barry guy got fired, and then everyone from Deadspin, a lot of staff were like, fuck this, I'm out. And you know what? Like, as somebody, I say I studied journalism a lot on this podcast, and I'm sorry for repeating myself, but, you know, like, that's something you always kind of have to be afraid of, especially in, like, this day and age where, like, the journalism industry doesn't really know how to evolve, right? Like, they don't yeah know where to go. They don't know what to do, right? Like, if you're in the journalism industry, you know that there's, like, a huge, weird thing going on right now where journalism just doesn't know what the fuck to do almost always. They don't know how to evolve adequately. They don't know how, you know, especially traditional journalism, like
yeah
fucking TV and Like web-based journalism is a little bit different, but they're better at evolving. But like the traditional forms of journalism just don't know how to fucking do it. And like, I think this is just another roadblock in the journalism world where like, holy shit, I don't know what to do. Like these advertisers are funding us, but how much power do they get? And I feel like the CEOs are too willing to give them too much power. It's a lot, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting to see. We wanted to mention it because, you know, we talk a lot about the journalism at Kotaku on this podcast because we find it legitimate.
We love Schreier. Yeah.
We love Jason Schreier.
Yep.
One day he's going to listen to this podcast and be like, I need to block them.
One day. Yep. if we get blocked by Jason Schreier, that will be the greatest.
I know. I'll be like, oh my God, achieve. I feel so seen.
We've been acknowledged.
We've been acknowledged.
Senpai noticed me.
No, seriously. But like, it's like, I don't know. It's unfortunate to see free speech get questioned like this, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that you know, the union kind of continues to take a stand and get somewhere. This is the good thing about unions, right?
Yeah,
for sure.
A lot
of people shit talk unions, but they're here for a reason, and exactly. So shit like this doesn't happen. Anyways.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's, I don't know how much more there is to say about that.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about EA and Valve.
Yeah, the last announcement we have is EA and Steam are partnering together.
Which is, like, very surprising because they have the Origin launcher.
Yeah.
So, like, consider me, like, really shocked about this.
Yeah.
Like, so I didn't have the Origin launcher for a while, and then I wanted The Sims.
Right.
You can't get The Sims on Steam, and I couldn't get all the Mass Effect or Dragon Age games on Steam, and I couldn't get Battlefront on Steam, so I was like, fuck it, guess I have to download the Origin launcher. So I did, and now I use the Origin launcher for, obviously, all of my EA games. But starting next spring, EA Access is going to be on Steam.
Yep, which I don't know.
Which is interesting.
It's very interesting. It just shows to me, like, they don't... Like, they obviously know the EA launcher just didn't...
Is fucking garbage?
It's stupid, yeah, that people didn't want to...
Have to use it?
Yeah, at all.
Yeah, right back at me. Yeah. Well, I didn't want to have to use it, right? But now I've got a whole bunch of games on it, so they better not get rid of it or I'll fucking snap status.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't really know how much there is to say about it. We just kind of wanted to bring it to attention because I find it fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And the partnership starts with Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And I think that was the catalyst for it.
That probably makes the most sense.
Because, obviously, that's such a highly anticipated game. EA knows that nobody likes the Origin launcher. They also know they want this game to be successful. They also know everybody likes Steam. No brainer.
Yeah.
Make it work. And then they worked something out from there, which I think is good, right?
Yep.
I think it's going to make a lot of the piss babies happy.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, like,
Steam only piss babies.
I think they're going to just like be like, why can't the Epic Game Store do this? Why can't I get Epic Games on Steam?
If greedy EA can do it, why can't Epic? That's it. That'll be what it is. Those are, just wait. We'll see quote for quote tweets saying that.
Yeah, exactly. In that voice. When you see people tweet that, just please apply that voice to it.
Imagine that bird meme. Y'all know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
I don't really have much else to say about that. You know what I do have something to say about, though? This is a surprise to Zay. I didn't tell him I'm going to talk about this.
Nope.
My Chemical Romance coming back, Beach.
Oh my God, that's so fucking awesome.
Beach, I'm so excited. Bring me my black hair dye.
Like, literally, everybody came out of the shadows for that. And was yep, I love My Chemical Romance. This is
I had already exposed my emo history, right? Everybody knew I was an emo kid in middle school. But now there are people that I didn't know were emo kids. Exposing their emo kid status.
It's so great. It's so great to see. I'm so upset because the first show, which is already sold out, like 100%,
oh my God, yeah.
Already sold out, sold the fuck out, was so close to where we used to live. Like, so close.
Devastating.
And
devastating.
Now, I'm hearing they may do a tour. We may see this.
I better. I better get a tour. I'm in Canada. Like, I better get a...
If they're interested in that, I wouldn't be surprised, but...
My first concert alone with my parents was their last tour.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so
the
funny.
The fucking... What was the album?
What?
That one. What was that fucking album called?
It was... Yeah, there you go. Furiously typing. It wasn't the Black Parade. It was after
Danger
that one, right?
Days.
Danger Days.
Danger Days. So I went to my first concert alone for that tour. And I was like 15.
Nice.
And like...
Nice.
In high school. And it was the sketchiest venue in Toronto.
Nice.
Right by the waterfront. Like, you could get murdered and just thrown into Lake Ontario. If you're from Toronto, it was the Sound Academy. and if they are from Toronto, they already knew it was the Sound Academy before I even said the name. Because the Sound Academy is the shittiest venue. There's, like, so many sick venues in Toronto. And the Sound Academy is just fucking garbage. But, yeah, like, I love them. Mm-hmm. I love them so much. So I'm just happy that they're back together. Three cheers for Sweet Revenge Beach.
Yeah, it's a great thing. I mean, like, I have to imagine with this comes a tour, and then after that they announce Umbrella Academy season 2. And yeah. Did you watch the first one, by the way?
No, not yet.
Oh, you gotta do it, Vic. It's so good.
They film it. They film it in a city near me, though.
You would love it so much.
I know. They film it like literally in a city right near me.
That's cool.
So like, whenever I watch it, I'm like, oh shit, I've been there.
Oh, so like, you have every watched time. It.
Well, no, like when I see clips.
Oh, okay.
Like I haven't watched all of it, but I've seen some clips. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I really want to. It's like on my list. But I also want to watch like Killing Eve and Altered Carbon.
Yeah,
and then also I need to rewatch Twilight like six times.
The list glows, grows and grows.
Yeah, it also glows because everything I do is glowing.
It glows and grows
because I'm an angel with angel hair.
Also, Spider-Verse.
Oh my god, yeah, Spider-Verse 2 got announced, which is like so exciting. I love that movie so much.
The first one was so good.
What's up, Danger? Not much, boo. I'm glad for a second movie. That's what's up.
It was so good. I'm excited for the next one.
I work out to that soundtrack.
Nice.
I mean, I also work out to Doja Cat, but but like I work out to either like really heavy like emo rock music or rap.
Nice.
Because it's just like it's
got a beat.
You know, it's all about that bass.
Yeah, it's got a beat and a bass
for squatting. Anyways, we're getting like really off topic. we should end this episode of the Geek Digest podcast. I wanted to say thank you guys so much. The Geek Digest?
Oh, the one I'm on right now.
Yeah. The sickest podcast ever.
Okay, yeah. Number one.
Exactly. I wanted to say thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Geek Digest. Once again, please let us know if there were any questions that they like asked that you liked. Let us know if there were any other questions that you wish I had answered so that, you know, we can make some tweaks for next week so that we can kind of give you guys the best interview that you could possibly want. So tweet at us or send us an email. We're at thegeekdigest@gmail.com or at thegeekdigest on Twitter. Please message us. And then any questions you ask that you kind of wanted me to answer, tweet them and I will answer them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can kind of get those answers that you were looking for. Also, if you haven't already left a review or a rating, we would really appreciate it. If we get to a certain numbers, I might release my ASMR moment from last week's lost episode. So please do that. We would appreciate it so much if you did. And that is everything from us today. My name is Victoria Shaz.
My name is Zaphod. It was really a great moment, and I'm sad that I'm the cause of why that just doesn't exist anymore.
I'm mostly just roasting you, don't worry.
It's all right.
I
know Richard said he left a rating, but I don't know if it's like because I'm not in the Great Britain.
It could be
UK
locked only, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I can only see Canadian ones. He might only be able to see UK ones.
That's interesting. Okay.
So maybe we should like ask other people who are like consistent viewers from other countries to let us know if there are any reviews that we haven't read.
Yeah, for sure. That would be good.
Anyways, I hope you all have a wonderful morning, evening, night, noon, whatever time it is, wherever you are, and stay geeky. Bye guys.